Andy, how are you?
Next case is 97317 Michael J. Lexie versus Ohio Edison.
He's been sick all day.
Company Justice Cook has recused himself in this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Cook. Judge William Wolf, Judge of the Court of Appeals from the Second District. Mr. Hewitt.
Court, please, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes to recognize and watch your time. Please, Court, Chief Justice and Justice, Supreme Court, this case arises out of an industrial injury for plaintiff, Mr. Lexie, who's being substation by his straight away from the space place to substation.
Would it be fair to say that you think that Bond versus Howard controls this case?
That's part of it.
We really struggled and tried to finally bring this whole thing to an end with some pretty definitive definitions.
I'm well aware of the fact that this issue of an injury to an employee who's a subcontractor or a contractor on the owner premises has been in this court many times and in the court of the state many times. And I think probably this court felt that it was in the last two cases, the Bond case and the Michaels case, had the final word on it.
I mean, the only issue is whether actively participated is here.
Yeah. And of course, in this case, the Court of Appeals did specifically find that there was no active participation in the job that was contracted. That is, the payment of the substation. That's a specific. But then, relying on a couple of other things, the Court of Appeals in the 11th District decided that active participation did not have to be limited to the performance of the job which was contracted, which in this case was being the substation, but indeed could have active participation by control of the premises, the environment.
Well, if Bond versus Howard doesn't control it totally, what else?
I'm sorry.
If Bond versus Howard doesn't totally control, what else would? What else is here?
Well, the court, I'm in perfect agreement that this case should not be here. I think as soon as they found there's no active participation in the job that was being done, that should close the case out.
Well, but I asked you if Bond versus Howard controlled, you said only in part. What else? What's the rest of the part?
Well,
what other part of the rest of the part is there?
I don't say part. I'm saying that the 11th Court of District Court of Appeals said it's part.
Yeah.
The 11th District Court of Appeals held that there could be active participation in the bifurcated, active participation in this case, the paint job, and active participation in controlling the environment where the accident happened.
If I could just get back to the facts.
Pardon?
I want to get back to the facts just a second to make sure I've said it. There's no allegation that you improperly de-energized the area, correct?
I'm sorry. I'm having difficulty hearing you.
There's no allegation that you improperly de-energized the area, correct?
No.
And there's no allegation that you told them the wrong area was de-energized?
Absolutely not.
The act that led to the injury was the worker turning left instead of right or vice versa and going into the energized area.
Right.
And there's some allegation here that you should have put flag, although there seems to be a statute that assigns that duty.
Well, that's been removed in this case too.
By
the summary judgment and by the district court of appeals.
Okay, so the flag issue is now.
You would have put back try this out.
Okay. So if the flag issue is out, what act did you guys control?
Well, I'm having difficulty saying it here because the judge wrote his opinion just was on the bench here this moment. I'm really wanting to criticize that kid.
She's not listening.
She's gone.
Well, all right. I was going to say about
that. Criticize the court. You have to personalize, just criticize the court.
But any event, the opinion states that we did the energized part. And it said, they just said that's part of the environment. The energy, the straightaway from where he's supposed to be to where he's not supposed to be. And we control that area where he wasn't supposed to be.
Subcontractor employee.
And I think what happens in these cases, I can suggest, is that the jury said again that if you're going to say that if you're worried about the environment where the accident happened, you have to look first at whether or not the trigger for statute applies. And the trigger for statute does not apply under the rulings of this court because it's a dangerous situation which is known for the person operating.
Taking out. How do you deal then with 29 CFR section 1926.416 that places that duty on the subcontractor, that duty to warn, that duty to define work areas. It seems to be very clear when you read the statute to place it on the subcontractor, not the general.
Well, first of all, that federal statute was first raised in the amicus brief, and this court was never raised in the court below as a defense by Ohio Edison or by anybody else in this case. Our belief is that the common law duty of care is what is at issue by Ohio Edison, and also that the frequenter statute does apply in this case. In Hirschbach, for example, which is the case that carved out this exception to the Wellman rule, the court specifically says in Hirschbach that the frequenter statute applied in that case under the exact, nearly the exact same set of circumstances. And the argument Ohio Edison is making now is that active participation cannot, as a matter of law, occur in controlling an aspect of the work environment. Now, Hirschbach that created that exception to the rule, that's exactly what occurred. In Hirschbach, the only thing that Cincinnati Gas and Electric did in that case, and if the justices will recall the facts of that case, was CG&E had a electric tower. The independent contractor had positioned a tractor with a winch on it that was on a tower arm of the tower, and only asked permission from CG&E to move the tractor because it was exerting too much pressure on the arm. CG&E denied that permission, and the tower arm fell while somebody was on top of it, and the man was killed. Under that set of facts, this court held that CG&E actively participated and carved out the exception to the Wellman rule. They did not actively participate in the sense that they directed CG&E or the independent contractor's activities or tried to do something that was work that was to be done by the independent contractor. They merely had an effect on an aspect of that work environment, exactly what happened in this case. Another analogy that I might use is, let's say that you have a dynamite factory. And in the dynamite factory, there is an assembly line that needs to be welded. The owners of the premises call in independent contractors to do the welding, and they see that there's dynamite stacked up next to the area that's going to be welded. Nobody would argue that this is not an inherently dangerous workplace that these welders will be working in. But if in the exercise of ordinary care, the owners of the dynamite factory should move that stock of dynamite away from the area that's going to be welded, and they don't do it, and the factory blows up, should this court make a rule of law that says that they have no duty of care to those workers, to the independent contractors? We believe that they shouldn't, and we believe that the rule of law that we are putting forward as a proposition here is entirely consistent with the Hirschbach case, the Vaughn versus Howard, and with Ford versus Michaels. All of those cases dealt with issues of custody and control of the workplace. Even the cases that are cited by Ohio Edison, the Eicher case and the Kafferke case, where it was found that general supervisory duties do not constitute active participation. In those cases, the dissenting opinions talked about whether or not there was custody and control over the work environment as an issue of active participation.
Mr. Crisson.
Yes, sir.
As I understand it, all you're saying today is these circumstances give rise to a duty of care against Toledo Edison.
Ohio Edison,
excuse me. And that is so because where Ohio Edison has to coordinate with the independent contractor to make sure that there's a safe working environment, by itself controlling the energizing and de-energizing of the high electrical equipment there, that ought to be deemed active in part participation.
Absolutely.
On the state of this record, we don't know at this time if they've reached that duty of care, assuming they should have it.
That's correct.
But if the guy from... Is it Toledo Edison?
Ohio Edison.
If the guy from Ohio Edison tells the independent contractor that it's safe to paint the left side of the building because he's de-energized it, and in fact he's negligently failed to de-energize some aspect of it, then there has been a breach of a duty of care for which Ohio Edison ought to be deemed
responsible.
Absolutely.
Have I got the essence of the case?
That's absolutely right on. And the point being that just because you have, Ohio Edison would like this court to adopt a rule of law that says when you have a workplace that's been deemed inherently dangerous by somebody, that they are now somehow immune from liability for anything that happens, which should not be the rule of law in a case like this. Hirschbach is still good law. Hirschbach says that in the exercise of reasonable care, you can eliminate the hazard that is causing the injury, then you should have a duty of care. And as a matter of fact, in a footnote to Hirschbach, where they cite a case called Parsons from the Sixth Circuit, a question arises there as to if you can eliminate the thing that's the hazard in the first place, isn't it even an inherently dangerous workplace?
In this case, though, You don't charge that they failed to de-energize the area properly.
The allegation of the complaint is that they were negligent in not maintaining a safe place to work.
It's all because they didn't put the flap. I mean, they told the foreman correctly what was de-energized, right?
Well, there were other allegations that there were other facts that would also come into play here, Your Honor. Ohio Edison had a site inspector there who was asked to place the flags, who said that Ohio Edison had no flags to place there.
Okay, so getting back to the fact that your foreman was properly told what areas were de-energized, correct?
Well, we didn't take issue with that.
You're taking issue with that. You're saying that they were not properly told. That's not what the briefs say.
Well, according to the...
Are you now disputing your brief?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. According to the briefs, there is a question of fact as to how the crew was informed as to what was to be painted that day. According to Mr. Marinkus, who was the owner of the crew and the foreman of the crew, Ohio Edison told him what sections of the substation were to be painted. The Ohio Edison site inspector, who was on the job there, shared responsibility with him for pointing out what sections of the substation were going to be painted, also shared responsibility with him for supervising the painters to make sure that they didn't stray out of the energized area.
Did you appeal anything from summary judgment?
Well, Your Honor, summary judgment was granted on the issue as to whether or not Ohio Edison had a duty of care, not whether they breached a duty of care. The lower court held that there was no duty of care to the employees of the independent contractor because Ohio Edison did not actively participate in the...
And you did not appeal that.
Ohio Edison... No, yes, we did.
You appealed that?
Yes, we did. We appealed that to the Court of Appeals. And in the Court of Appeals, we argued that all of these things that I've put before the court today are all things that would cause... That should cause reasonable minds to conclude that Ohio Edison did actively participate under the old standard of ethics.
And you did not cause appeal to the Court of Appeals?
No, we did not, because the Court of Appeals found this opinion to be in conflict with another district, and this court certified for us an issue presented for review as to what constitutes active participation. I still have some time remaining, and I'd like to also express to the court a policy reason for why our proposition of law should be the one that's adopted from this issue presented for review, and that is that if Ohio Edison's proposition of law is the view that prevails, then our position is that this court would be creating a rule of law that would encourage those who have custody and control over the most dangerous workplaces in the state of Ohio to stay as far removed from safety concerns as possible so as to immunize themselves from liability for any injury that might occur to an independent contractor. If this court holds that the only way that a property owner, a premises owner, or a general contractor can be can have a duty of care. The duty of care only arises when they directly participate in job activities. What motivation is there for them to keep the work environment safe for the workers of independent contractors? They should do everything that they can to stay back, to stay away from the site so that they're not found to have actively participated in something. So Ohio Edison basically is asking this court to go back to the Wellman rule, and to forget that Birch Park and its progeny even existed. The problem with the Wildman rule is that it would engender just exactly the type of liability problems that I've discussed here today, and that's why the Birch Park case, we believe, was decided. In this case, facts specific to this case, Michael Lexi had painted two electrical substations before, and he was the most experienced painter on this crew. Ohio Edison is in a much superior position with much greater knowledge of the substation, the mechanics of the substation, and how they work than anybody else here to identify and to eliminate hazards that would occur to people who are working in this environment.
But he knew,
they should have a duty to do so.
He knew all the hot areas.
Well, Your Honor, he knew the hot areas from looking down on the ground. They had tailgate meetings in the morning and at lunchtime. And if you can picture a superstructure of a electric substation, the way that the Ohio Edison guy told the painters how to paint was, he would point physically up to the lines and say, now that line over there is hot, and that one's hot, but that's cold, and that area there is hot, and that's hot there. And by the time the workers left the ground and got up to this part of the structure, you lose all sense of perspective, which is why they had spotters down there, and why Mr. Lexi asked the Ohio Edison worker about the flags that had been used at the other substation.
The question is, yes, he knew where the hot areas were.
Well, I would say that he did not know where the hot areas were. He wouldn't have turned away and he turned. I think that he made a mistake, and I think that if there had been flags and barricade taken place, that he wouldn't have made that same mistake. But what, again, is at issue here, and what the court must focus on here, is whether or not there is a duty of care in the first place. I mean, all of these issues about whether or not there was a breach of that duty of care are unbelievably, in a case that's 11 and a half years old now, still legally subject to the fact finding.
Doesn't the statute itself assign that duty of care to the employer, where it says the employer, being the subcontractor, shall post and maintain proper warning signs for such a survey that the employer shall advise employees of the location of such lines to hazard involved and protective measures to be taken? This statute lays out who has what duty of care, and it places it squarely on the subcontractor.
Is that the CFR section you're discussing? Well, I think also an issue there is whether or not you have an employer-employee relationship that is fit within the confines of that CFR section, where they talk about what the employer should do for its employees rather than for independent contractors. I see my time's expired. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Mr. Hewitt, you've saved a little over 7 minutes of your time.
Since I get carried away, I have a few. But I didn't have to point out, I don't know if it's this statement or what. Undertaking a specific duty. In other words, they point out that this is
if there's anything that brings our IFs into this, it's because they deactivated one or two buses. They cop two people, which, and definitely when it's said, when we're talking about flags, we're talking about everything else, and they made the issue there, and they actually participated. At one time, actually participated because we unlocked the door and let the people into the substation. That was actually participation. They also said we selected the type of paint we wanted to use. That's actually participation. Those just went out the window. Plaintiff did not contest. I think that's rather important. The sad thing is, the Court of Appeals, I think, relied primarily on a specific section of the Michael versus Ford Motor case. Ford retained no custody or control over the area where the general contractor cut the holes in Mr. Michael Sussman's detail. Or did Ford retain control over the means or manner of performance maintenance and construction? I think using that language, 11th District Court of Appeals, the same that this court had in the Bond case and the other case, did not rule on this duty of control over the environment. And using that came from active participation to a passive participation in the fact of their safety. And I think from that one paragraph, or one sentence, two sentences, in the Michaels case, let the District Court of Appeals discuss this theory. There could be control over the environment as well as control over the job. Now, that doesn't show up anywhere. It doesn't show up in the Michaels case. That's that one or two sentences where that whole theory was in.
Aren't they pushing an analogy that maybe isn't fair? Taking your case to the Ford situation, is it your case where you're shutting off the power and leaving the power on in certain locations? It's sort of like if Ford Motor Company was moving the holes from day to day? And changing where the area of danger was.
So you understand how this works. I did work on this job. Miraculous would tell Campbell, who was the highest man on the scene, who was there to deactivate, or he wanted paint to extend. Campbell would put that information into my office's dispatch office and then write up a switching room. And the next morning, Campbell would go back out and open the switches, which would deactivate the place. The Miraculous wanted to paint. The choice for Miraculous wanted to paint was made by Miraculous, and the IS had deactivated that area. And Miraculous, another one I wanted to put in here. Miraculous testified on deposition. It was de-energized where he was working. He just finished up my half and three hours right under in the back. I was watching him and I could have looked around the other way, and he walked back in an area which was activated. Wherever Michael was working, he was working in the area that you instructed him to work? Yes, is that correct? Right. Is it possible that you did what that you did and you had him in the wrong spot in the wrong area? The answer is no, I didn't put him in the wrong spot. I knew exactly where I was put him. That's the kind of that's the evidence is in on this case. I'm not going to say that the IS is trying to come up with the idea of making the place more dangerous. We have no IS. The frequenter statute, which is used a lot. If it's dangerous on the property, the frequenter, and there is a duty to give it statements to the people that are working on it. Yes. However, you've done it in the cases, I believe, the Tedesco case and the
issue here is not the frequenter statutes, it's actively participated, and they're different.
Well, I know they're different.
Okay.
I know they're different. They're trying to say that's active. They're trying to say that active participation can be control of the environment, and I'm saying that
has come out in the last few years, and certainly in absolute conflict with the Pulaski's.
You want it remanded?
You want
it reversed and the trial court reinstated?
Well, yeah, that's what I want.
Oh, that's not remanded.
I don't know, but I miss when I talk to these, I miss the level of the court. I want it back down there with my summary judgment reinstated is what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please return to court.